Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I'm John Batchelor, continuing with Troy Senek, the author of the new book, A Man of Iron, The Turbulent Life and Improbable Presidency of Grover Cleveland. It is 1892. The election at the end of the year calls forth candidates from both parties. Benjamin Harrison is a sitting president, but that doesn't make him exempt from being challenged by his side. There's a man named Blaine, James G. Blaine, 3rd Congressional District of Maine, then becomes Speaker of the House and becomes Senator of Maine, then becomes Senator from the railroads, a man whom Grover Cleveland defeated in 1884, the first run for the presidency. There's a colorful story about pastor named Burchard, a Presbyterian pastor, just like Grover Cleveland's dad, who makes a remark, rum Romanism and rebellion, to condemn the Democratic Party right before the election. That may or may not have persuaded enough votes, who can tell? But in any event, James C. Blaine is all wrapped up in being defeated in 84. And nobody believes him that he's not running again in 92. I mentioned Blaine because he represents the era, the Gilded Age. And Troy, your book is a wonderful antidote to the Gilded Age, because we can celebrate what you'd have to say is unregulated capitalism, yes, but at the same time, the public wanted someone to challenge these men growing rich and what you identify as the widening gap between the employers and the employed. So as Cleveland thought about the presidency in 92, as people made entreaties to him, will you run again, Mr. President, what did he make of Blaine, of the Gilded Age, of Jay Gould, of the man who will be Morgan, all of the rich men? What was his opinion?
Cleveland is interesting on this front because he is not crusading against corporate power. He is not somebody who is disturbed by the existence of wealth in and of itself, you know, that gets to him down in his bones. But he has this sort of night watchman sensibility about this. You can go and make your fortune, but we're gonna watch you. And we need to see where this is coming from. And Cleveland, in sort of keeping with his classical liberal roots, and this makes him, again, sort of confusing because it doesn't fit cleanly into any sort of modern ideology. He's a free market guy. He wants to see people succeed. He wants the government to keep a light touch on the economy. But he is concerned about income inequality. And he locates the root of the problem, at least the problem that he feels it's appropriate for him to address as president of the United States, in the intersection between corporate power and government power. So as I mentioned earlier, with the tariffs, this is his real concern, that these companies are using Congress to get them what they need to inflate their balance sheets. But, you know, he is the first president, for instance, to propose a federal role in labor arbitration. So he does think that the government has a role to support the working man, such as they were. But he is not driven with the same sort of passion on this as a lot of the burgeoning populists are.
At the same time, he, as a classical liberal, is witnessing what we would call today price instability, inflation and deflation. Does he opine about that as he's being romanced by the party to run again?
This is one of the most difficult things about Cleveland's return to understand, because it is a vestige of an era where the rules were so much different. So the ascendant wing of the Democratic Party at this point in time is the side that is supporting the expansion of silver. And Cleveland actually puts his toe back in the water by writing an open letter denouncing that position. Now, today, if a presidential candidate made his big opening move by defying the ascendant wing of the party, you would rightly consider that person to have just taken a step tantamount to political suicide. The reason that's not what happens to Cleveland is in 1892, we are still in the era prior to the presidential primary. These decisions are still made by party elites, by party insiders. And they look around in 1892. By the way, they weren't always that fond of Grover Cleveland because he rocked the boat a lot. But they look around in 1892 and say, well, you know, he may be a pain sometimes, but this seems like a guy who is not going to pull apart the edifice of the American economy for fun. And he seems like the most stable choice that we have at this point. So this is a central part in the end of how he gets the nomination and returns in 1892.
Yes, and Harrison will run again, and he'll choose Whitelaw Reid, a former editor of the Tribune, as his vice presidency. Notably, James G. Blaine does not run, but James G. Blaine represents a common understanding of what Senate can do in these days and what the Congress can do. And there's a tension here that perhaps remains important in our 21st century. And I want to draw on it, Troy, because so much of your book, I thought, well, that's where that comes from. The country was comfortable with using the Congress as their viceroys and not going to the president at the time. But there were critics of using the Congress as the lead, because, and one of those critics was Woodrow Wilson, representing in his PhD in, I believe it was 1880, congressional democracy, congressional leadership, denying it, saying the president has a role here. Did Cleveland enter into those arguments? Because they were using how he thought about the presidency as a way of seeing another way. Did he write about Congress has too much power? James G. Blaine had too much power as a senator, and he had too much power as a secretary of state, and now he's going to have too much power as a former member of Congress.
And no, quite the contrary, particularly in his first term, Cleveland goes out of his way in a fashion that drives some of his fellow Democrats crazy to say, I don't have a role on a lot of these questions. My conception of the executive is sufficiently narrow that, look, a thing comes to my desk and I sign it or I veto it. And that's where the job stops and that's where the job starts. Implicitly, he never really hoists a flag about this, but in the second term, adopts a somewhat more aggressive posture, but it's mostly in the use of executive power in sort of outside settings. For instance, when he sends federal troops to Chicago for the Pullman strike, it's not as much in the relationship with Congress. Cleveland is actually quite content most of the time. I mean, there will be some light political pressure applied, light by our current standards, to members of Congress. But beyond that, he is not thinking of it as a big structural system-wide imbalance.
How have I got this far and not mentioned Tammany Hall? Good heavens. Okay, so immediately in the summer of 92, before, at the time he's contesting for the nomination, there are other possibilities, including the former governor, now Governor Senator Hill of New York, a man who is sympathetic, if not owned by Tammany Hall. Cleveland is not, nor will he make promises to Richard Kroger, to William Shaheen, to Charles Francis Murray. These are the big bosses of Tammany Hall. What does Tammany Hall make of Cleveland? Do they think they can use him?
Tammany Hall regards Cleveland from pretty much the moment he comes on their radar, which is really when he runs for governor of New York. They regard him as a pure and utter thorn in their side, because Cleveland, not only is Cleveland unwilling to play ball the way that Tammany usually plays ball, right? Which is making sure that the Tammany men get the jobs in the right places, that policy moves in such a way that Tammany is always benefiting from it. But also Cleveland, even when the stakes are relatively low, when a more canny politician may just give Tammany the low stakes thing that they want so I don't have to fight them on the high stakes, Cleveland won't do it because he is so cussed when it comes to principle. So Tammany really is fatigued by him and plagued by him. They, throughout his tenure, are at war with him. And of course, he annoys them just as much as president, even though he's outside of the New York context, because Tammany has its finger in all these pies of people that they want to get federal jobs. Cleveland still won't play ball. So they are at war pretty much his entire career.
Cleveland wins the election in November of 92. 277 electoral votes versus 145 for President Harrison. One of, if not the only time, two men who have been president run against each other. Someone has to lose. There's a factor here, the People's Party. James B. Weaver runs as a candidate for this third party that wins 22 electoral votes. That's what we remember as populism, and that's what we remember as a man named Brian. But that's in the future. When we come back, Cleveland confronts the panic of 93 and the disruption of inflation and deflation. Troy Senek is the author. A Man of Iron is the book. I'm John Bash.
I'm David Pogue from CBS Sunday Morning. In the new season of my podcast, Unsung Science, you'll meet the discoverers of Ernest Shackleton's shipwreck, Endurance, lost beneath the Antarctic for 100 years.
It looked like the day when it sank is just a very good environment down there to conserve the shipwreck.
The woman who invented forensic genealogy and has solved over 150 cold cases.
It's controversial, right? Because you never know if sitting around your Thanksgiving table, there's somebody who's been getting away with murder or rape.
And the NASA engineers who flew a helicopter on Mars.
The density is 1% that of Earth's. 1% air density. It sounds impossible, and it is almost impossible.
It's season two of Unsung Science, presented by CBS Sunday Morning and Simon & Schuster. Listen to Unsung Science on Amazon Music or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Mo Rocca, and it's been a while. But I've been busy digging up even more stories about the people and things of the past that are fascinating me now.
What did your father think of the label, of the whole idea of the Latin lover?
From the screen idols who redefined Hollywood's leading man.
I think it was a love-hate relationship. My dad hated the word macho.
That's what I call the Latin lover type of a role, which is one-dimensional.
To the dog who introduced millions of kids to classic literature.
I remember, like, on my 10th birthday, I think it was, we were going to go mini golfing, and I insisted, but we had to stay home for Wishbone first.
Listen to Mobituaries wherever you get your podcasts.
Now to exclusive reporting from CBS News.
Join Gail King, Tony DeCoppel, and Nate Burleson for original reporting. CBS Mornings, weekday mornings on CBS.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Time for a sofa upgrade?
Visit washablesofas.com and discover Anabay, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices, with sofas starting at $699. Anabay brings you the ultimate in furniture innovation with a modular design that allows you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabay is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquid simply slides right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink and feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get up to 60% off plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.